Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network. Emotional, creative, and often comical. Welcome to another in-depth but out-of-the-ordinary look at what it's like to write. This is Writer's Block with Coin6 News anchor Jenny Hansen.
So joining us on this week's Writer's Block are authors Ed Fuller and Gary Grossman. They are the authors of Red Deception, a follow-up to Red Hotel. Thank you so much for being here, you guys.
It's a pleasure, and thanks for having us.
Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about Red Deception. I read the whole synopsis, and wow, what a plot this novel is. So it's being described as this, you know, globe-hopping thriller. Let's first talk about your backgrounds, because I want to know just how this all came to be. It sounds like you guys both have very different backgrounds. So Ed, let's start with you first. I know you're in the hospitality industry, but you had a lot of things that contributed to this book. So tell me about, you know, where you were coming from.
I'll try to be as efficient with this as I can, but it's significant that I was a Boston University graduate. It's significant that I served in Germany and Vietnam, where I got my Bronze Star and Army Commendation Medal. It's significant that I then went to work for a company named Marriott, who built hotels in Portland. And I went up through the sales ranks. I started representing the hotels in Washington to the bases. And so that's why they needed somebody that had military jargon and could talk to the master sergeants and above. They moved me around the marketing jobs, came back to Washington, and ultimately became, in late 70s, chief marketing officer. And from that job, I did cross training and I opened two hotels, one in Long Island and one in Boston. The Boston Copley was a big convention hotel, but I kept coming back to Boston is the theme here. And so when we got done with that, I went into a regional role in Chicago. And that covered from Oklahoma to Toronto. They knew I loved two things, international and Hawaii. And so my next move was to California, to Laguna Hills. That was 1989. And about a year and a half later, Bill Marriott said, I want you to open the international division. And when I opened the international division, I ran it for the next 22 years, which gave me experience in 151 countries and operated in 73. So that's where a lot of the stories come from. I was still traveling until COVID, traveling to China two times a year. China was a major target. I figured out I've been to China about 120 times. Spent a lot of time in the Middle East because we had a regional office there. Obviously, Europe, Latin America to a lesser degree because the office was in Miami. But my involvement in all areas was pretty much capsulized in that Rutsch bio. Wow.
Okay, well, that is quite a background and just storied career. And then Gary, I know your background, you were a journalist, you've done a lot of media, and then it sounds like at some point you branched off into to writing these thrillers, these geopolitical thrillers that you've been doing now.
Well, it was a natural transition for me, which I didn't know was happening.
Yeah.
I was a journalist. I wrote for newspapers in Boston. I worked for NBC News, local television in Boston, doing documentaries and hundreds of documentaries for History Channel and A&E and Discovery, National Geographic, and on and on and on. I was in New York, and I remember the date exactly, pitching the History Channel, in fact, with my business partner, then Rob Weller, in our production company we had at the time, Weller Grossman Productions. And somebody in the meeting, somebody said, do you think we're running out of history? And I thought, well, that's odd. But what I ultimately realized is that they were beginning to explore whether or not they would get into reality programming. But the question still did hit me hard. And I said, well, who knows what kind of history is going to be made later today or let alone tomorrow? I remember that date so well because that was September 10th, 2001.
Oh, wow.
So driving back to California, as Rob and I did, we got a car out of Westchester County Airport and drove cross country back to LA. I began thinking about the first novel and not knowing that I was going to be writing a novel. That first novel was Executive Actions. It led to four others in that series, then another novel, and then meeting with Ed, which was so interesting because I write from the comfort of my computer right here. I get to talk to people in their jobs in the White House and the CIA and everywhere else. But Ed's the real deal. He was out there doing those things. And when I met him, I realized he was as much in the anti-terrorism business as the hotel business. His stories are astounding and hair-curling, and he was there saving people's lives and getting them out of the line of fire, literally the line of fire. So every time we sit down, Ed's sharing more of his stories with me. And the first set worked their way into the novel, Red Hotel. It's a novel, but there's so much real meat in it from Ed. And now more with Red Deception, where the infrastructure of America is the target. And that's pretty darn timely. Yeah. And the bad guy is a loosely disguised Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. Well, that's even more timely, if not tied for first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I want to get into the plot of the book in a moment, but so how did you guys come together? How did this collaboration even come to be?
I wrote a book called You Can't Lead With Your Feet on the Desk, which is a business book, not a novel, and had a lot of support from some folks that Gary's going to mention now, and that'll take it the right way there.
Hey, I like how Gary had the book there, right?
Well, not only do I have it, you know, honestly, I have to tell you, do you see the marks in here, the tabs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's because there are real life stories that Ed has written about that really prove you can't lead with your feet on the desk if you want to be effective in business internationally, let alone domestically. And I keep it handy because all through writing, the character of Dan Reilly, who's not so loosely based on Ed Fuller and his life and his experiences, I keep going back to his management book because the stories are also in there.
Yeah.
But there's a, see our dog over here in the corner, that's Thames. I was walking Thames one night in our neighborhood, bumped into a neighbor, had a dog named Shadow, kind of interesting name for a dog. Why? Well, because this particular guy is kind of in that realm, Bruce Feirstein. He wrote the first three James Bond movies that Pierce Brosnan did. So why not have a dog named Shadow?
Okay.
Makes sense. He bumped into me. He said, oh, I'm so glad we're meeting on the street here. I have this friend of mine from a Boston University board. They were both on boards at BU. And he's interested in collaborating on a novel. And he told me about Ed and his experience with Marriott International. And I thought, well, geez, what do I have in common with him? He said, you will have to meet him, Gary, and he will be somebody who will astound you. Well, in that first 30 seconds that we met, I heard enough, let me say that, to say, let's keep talking for another 2 hours. And the 2 hours now have been conversations that we've had over 4 years, two books out now, I guess about 4 years, Ed, and a third book almost finished and a fourth book that we'll be going into as well.
Oh, well, that's exciting. So then talk about the plot of this novel, because it's very involved and there's a lot of stuff happening. I felt very bad for the president of the United States when I saw just all the different crises that were going on.
There is, I think, something to the Chinese expression that if a butterfly is flapping its wings in China, what is the impact here? Mm-hmm. We live in a world where the butterflies are flapping and we're feeling it. Red Deception begins with an attack on the infrastructure of America's roads and bridges and water systems and tunnels. The very things that we heard about yesterday on the news and we'll be hearing about tomorrow on the news in terms of how vulnerable we are and how vulnerable those physical assets are. In the hands of a bad guy who sends a team out to see what he can do about disrupting American life, that is our Vladimir Putin character named Nikolai Gorshkov. He wants to sow unrest in America. Why? To take our eyes off a couple of prizes. One is the White House, and the other is what he really wants to do in rebuilding the old Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. The Eastern Bloc of nations that used to comprise that, those satellites that protected Russia, the Soviet Union, from NATO. Well, NATO, not necessarily, well, later NATO, but earlier the West. That is Vladimir Putin's overriding desire since he became a KGB officer and saw the dissolution of the Soviet Union, the fall of the wall. It is our characters' overriding belief because he's a stand-in for Putin. He wants to set back the clock. He thinks that is the worst thing that Russia has ever done. So we weave those into the plot, and I'll let Ed take it from there because that's where his own experiences and the real things that happen with Ed come into play.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, you've got that going on today. If you just look at a couple of people, Vladimir Putin to start with, and the chairman in China who just declared himself chairman for life, we are intriguingly taking a string and ultimately will probably tie the two together in our 10th book. But this is what I call a story of someone who is an extraordinary puppet master. Putin is a very, very bright guy. You have to give that to him. And in reality, the first book gave you a look at some of those objectives that he did succeed in, such as taking portions of the Ukraine. But he wants the entire empire as it was back. That's his underlying desire. In the meantime, he is floating in a pond of activities, issues, challenges, the price of oil, problems that are going on around you and me and Gary every day. And he puts his Russian face on and denies everything. But between you and me, he has caused every problem in the Red Hotel and Red Deception through manipulating, using, and actually advocating in some cases for his country. You get a little confused whether he's working for the country or Vladimir, but the personality is such. And Gary had great research on Vladimir when we were writing the first book. And when you start looking deeper, you start to understand that this whole world is about greed and greed and greed. Because even in this day and age, it was clear when it was back, they were robbing the stagecoach. They were chasing bandits that had robbed the bank, go back into old England. All those times, it was the same objective. We're still there. What we ran into was using some of my real examples that he could be focused on.
I want to hear about some of those. What are some of the real examples?
Well, the Red Hotel, I always like to use this, kicked off with blowing up a hotel in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. That actually was the Jakarta Marriott.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I just move over my trip report from being involved in that. And I was there the second day and start talking about some of the things. You get into the crash in this book, if you remember, of a plane. That was me really in Colombia with five of my associates and two of the banks, and we crashed in Cartagena. And so we took that story from the reality of there and just transformed it to Venezuela with some other objectives. So we have taken a series of these. About 40% of the book has real input from our world. And I think the best example, and if I'm taking a question away, I apologize, but the best example is why do we call it red? And the answer is very simply put, when we started, I had a kidnapping the first week I was on the job of a hotel in Mexico, Cancun. Been there for vacation?
Oh, yeah. And you had a person who was kidnapped who was staying at the hotel? Is that?
No, we had the entire executive committee kidnapped.
Oh, okay.
From their homes and from their families.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the kidnapping turned out to be extremely challenging for me to try to work around because at the time I did not have an organization or a system, and nor did North America. So the kidnapping took us 4 days to get the people back. We went through a whole series of steps of how we got them back. And we went through a series of steps on how we were able to try to get the bad guy. He was never arrested because the guy that was running the drug system there was the governor of Cancun.
Of course, yes.
So we had tripped across a district manager in our investigation, and they just came in and took the executive committee to hold hostage until we could figure out how we were going to work with them. Their answer was, don't bother us. Our answer was, you are impacting our guests, their children.
Yeah.
We are going to do more than bother. We're going to replace people.
Yeah.
And so we replaced people. We tightened up rules and regulations. Uh-huh. We used agents to work in the hotel to see if we had anybody we'd missed. It was a challenge, but it gave me the sense that we were in trouble. We needed a structure. The U.S. at that time was not green, but it was probably orange. I don't know. Mexico had no grade for terrorism and challenges, no rating. So we worked out a situation where we ranked the countries we worked in.
Mm-hmm.
And all those countries, except I had Hawaii, and then we went by the U.S. model. Mm-hmm. All those countries were all over the board in their own systems. So we took control of how we were going to look at them. We had help from all these three initial organizations that have three initials in their name. And we also grabbed help from some private companies, established a crisis committee, and then we established our ranking. And of course, red was the most serious ranking. And clear was the best.
So I was thinking the red had something to do with the Soviets, but it's just based on the danger ranking of these different areas.
Absolutely. Okay. And that crisis committee then dealt with all of the other situations. And also very interesting, as I watched it evolve, we would bring in the FBI, CIA to test our system.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some good ideas, but got pats on the back for a corporate system being developed.
I just love that I read that you're a leader in the hospitality industry. It sounds like you're the guy that, you know, especially if these bad things are happening, they bring you in to fix or to figure out what to do. Is that, I mean, do I have that loosely correct?
Well, I've got to give you an honest, long, short answer on this. So when I was in California, Bill Merritt called and said, I want you to develop the international division.
Mm-hmm.
We only had 12 hotels outside the border,
mm-hmm.
and they all reported to domestic regionals. I had Hong Kong because I was in California,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't reject the job at all. I took it. But the fact was, when it came to issues like this, over the years, we got to a point that when I retired, we had opened 550 hotels in 73 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, when we expanded our system, we developed different supports that still tied into the crisis committee when there was a crisis. Mm-hmm. And when there was a definable crisis, the decision-making went from the hotel to the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Merritt notified myself, and then domestic added a committee when the New Orleans hurricane happened. And he said, you guys are the decision-makers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stick my head in. You make the call. So in another incident that I'll give you some time to guide this and me shut up. But in another incident or two incidents, I had hired aircraft to get people out of a dangerous situation. And the chief counsel was not happy with me because he feared that one plane goes down, we'd be paying millions. And I won the argument because I was the decision maker. And my argument with him is those lives are more important.
Yeah.
I was in San Francisco about 4 years ago at a function for Visit California, who I work with now. And a guy came up to me I'd never seen. He said, you're Ed Fuller from Marriott? I said, yes. He says, I was one of those people that went out on that plane, and my wife was terrorized until we got on that plane, and mm-hmm. I can't thank you enough. And I am now a very loyal Marriott customer.
Only stays at Marriott Hotel. I mean, that's great. What country did that happen in, by the way?
One was Libya. And the other was Mexico.
Man.
I was in Mexico less than 24 hours before the problem started happening. So I was there at the time. So,
and how much does that cost on a credit card? How much goes on your American Express card for a jumbo jet?
Well, to be honest, Gary, the hiring Mexicana wasn't the problem. We just gave them a credit card. That was not a problem because it was the company card. And the owner reimbursed us for doing it. Oh. That's how happy he was. Mm-hmm. Libya was a different situation because we had brought in a ship that was going to take our guests and our employees out, but the ship was stuck in a storm in Malta, and it was the ship America had already bought, so we were going to be the second trip. Mm-hmm. So then we went to issues around having them escape to Tunisia, and that didn't work because the Schlumberger vice president who was in country came over and said, I just put my people on a bus. They were stopped by bandits. There were people killed and ladies were attacked. And so he says, don't go that route. And that left us one solution, which came from the committee. And in Jordan, there is a company that supplies planes and guards to work for the UN in Africa. Called them. We got them $300,000 out of the Jordan hotel because they wanted cash. And they wanted a bonus if they stayed over X amount of time. They came in and they had guards around their plane, and the airport was a mess. And that's another story altogether.
Wow.
We can tell you in the next book.
In the next one, yeah. Gary, I can see how you guys talked for 2 hours longer that first time.
Well, can I just while talking now, and I've not answered this ever before, but you can imagine what it's like sitting at a dinner party and you realize you're listening to the most interesting person in the world,
right,
with all these stories, and that he's the real deal and has been responsible for saving lives and making places safer. Mm-hmm. And then you have the opportunity not just to sit at that one dinner with him, you get to write books together. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's phenomenal.
Well, because it's different than, you know, you think of military personnel saving lives, or, you know, soldiers on the ground, or cops, or whoever, firefighters. Like, this is a whole different avenue to that, which just kind of makes it different. So what was it like writing this book? How did you guys do it? I know we've been going through the pandemic. Right. I don't know if you wrote it prior to that. Did you Zoom? Did you guys actually meet, get together? How did that work?
I needed an artist. Mm-hmm. I could not write the book. I could do the business book, which I did on my own with heavy editor from Wiley. But when it came to this, I just could not put the characters or talent enough mm-hmm. to make the characters really come to life. Mm-hmm. And so I needed help. And I didn't want a ghostwriter. I wanted a partner. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that was the best introduction I can do, Gary, except that I got an exceptional partner.
Thank you. Likewise, Ed. It's been a great relationship. It's pretty much what we're doing right now. And you heard me prompt a response from Ed because I wanted to know, you know, what it would cost, you know, what it cost. I think we put a figure in Red Hotel on the plane, but mm-hmm. this figure is even higher now. So we talk. It started with us just getting to know one another. Trust begins with time together. And we had some lunches, we had some dinners. I decided not to record stories. As a reporter, I'm always recording, but I find that I listen better with a pen in my hand and taking notes. It goes back to high school. I can probably still tell you where anything is on one of those notebook pages because it was kind of hand to head.
Yeah.
And that's still the case for me. Then we also talk about story, plot. Obviously, what's the beginning? What's the middle? What's the end? We do an outline. We do beats. We do the plot points. We agree on where we're heading. And then I go off and I start writing. Mm-hmm. And during that process, Ed and I still keep talking because, for example, in Red Deception, I'm just patting the book right here with my hand, Red Deception, we were just about finished. And Ed said, I think we need something else. And it was a great prompt because he said, you know, he told me about the story that we've just heard about the plane crash. And I began thinking about that and what could we do with it? Well, it really tied into another element of the book, a parallel to the Cuban Missile Crisis, but now happening in Venezuela, involving, and it's not so much a spoiler alert, involving the North Koreans. Well, we created a whole scene that spread out over a number of chapters just based on that one thought that Ed had. I think we need some more action. Let's focus on the centerpiece being that crash. Mm-hmm. That's what our relationship is like. And then when a draft is finished and rewritten, Ed takes it, drills down in it. We go back, we do notes together, we get it polished. And then there's the session that we have, obviously, with a great book editor. Our publisher is Beaufort Books. We've had terrific editors. Leading editor is editor-in-chief Megan Trank. And a good editor will also put out a note that will make you think about something. It might not be, here's how to do it, but here's what you should think about. Mm-hmm. That thinking in Red Deception had us cut 90 pages.
Oh my gosh.
And it made it better.
Yeah.
It absolutely made it better.
Yeah.
We have a lot of history in the books. We have a lot of current events in the books, certainly a lot of character story and development, but also we're writing a novel that needs to be moving and action oriented, enough surprises to keep people turning the page or, you know, listening. So that's the process. And having collaborated with people in TV shows and documentaries, that I knew how to do, how to collaborate with somebody on a book, I learned how to do, and I couldn't have asked for a better partner and a better friend, honestly. And also, he knows people who knows people, so I don't want to screw up. Yeah, could be a knock at my door, all these people that Ed knows.
Right, no, exactly. So I wanted to ask you guys real quickly, you have a book coming up after this that you're already working on, is it another Red book?
It is, it's Red Chaos.
Okay.
So we're building to the chaos.
And same character.
Same character, okay. Well, some have died and some have survived.
Okay.
But, you know, they go their route just with the flick of a pen.
It's been a pleasure talking to you both. And good luck with all this. I'm hoping maybe it'll be on the big screen someday, too. It just plays out like that in my head.
It's in your hands.
Oh, it's in my hands.
You get more people reading the book, we'll be on the screen.
Okay.
And you can come down and help us produce it.
I'll say I knew you back when. Yeah.
Thank you
both. You too. Have a good day.
Take care.
Best of luck with all this.
Take care
as well.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from COIN 6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch COIN 6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to COIN 6 News at 10 on Portland CW.